I'll call you up three at a time. Lee Davis, or two at a time. Lee Davis and Rob Kreibel, please.
Good afternoon, Chair, Commission, Director. My name's Lee Davis, and I'm from Ellensburg, Washington. I'm the current president of the Kittitas County Field and Stream Club. I'm a hunter education instructor, Boy Scout leader. I'm on the Weenass, Clackam Wildlife Area Committees. I'm also on the DFW GMAC. Been volunteering with the department and Eyes in the Woods also for about a dozen years, and so I've got a lot of experience working with the department and a lot of the employees. One of the things I wanted to talk about today was my experiences with the Weenass Target Shooting Committee. I think the choice of the region selecting Ross Strategic as a facilitator was an excellent idea. It seemed to level the playing field and to eliminate any mistrust that had built up between our Field and Stream Club and the department over previous years and previous administration. Regional Director Livingston's been doing a great job. There's been some personnel changes. So the working relationship our Field and Stream Club has with the department has really turned a corner, and it's making a lot of great headway. And as he briefed earlier, we're really close to bringing a Central Washington shooting range in the county. I won't go into any more details and specifics on that. I don't want to jinx it. Hopefully we'll have some ink drying on the paper next week. One of the things that we did notice, speaking on myself on the committee, some of the shortfalls that we found on the target committee was that we didn't have a lot of data to work with. Some of the law enforcement data, we had some specifics, but it didn't drill down to the deepest level, like maybe where at on that wildlife area was a citation issue. When you were dealing with a wildlife area of 100,000 acres, and then you're trying to deal with some problems on it, knowing the exact locations can really help. So maybe on future software advances with the department's law enforcement data management, you might consider a software or program that gives them more data management ability so they can look at hot spots. Okay? So that was one of the things. The other thing we realized is that the department hadn't done any recreation surveys on the land to know to the extent of who's really recreating. I mean, we know kind of what groups, but to what extent, where at, how often, the frequency. And so they had to put together some surveys and get some of that data for us, and I really think it only captured a small portion. It did help, and it got us going in the right direction. So with this being a pilot project, one of my suggestions would be to have your other wildlife area managers and the people that manage the other lanes areas start working on that now, because these problems are going to continue and get bigger. But I just wanted to let everybody know that the Weenass Target Shooting Committee, it really worked out well. So,
thank you, Lee. I appreciate your involvement. Don Wallace, please, and Rob.
Thank you, and good afternoon. First off, Chair Smith, just to let you know, I dropped off 6 copies of that ORCA report out front for the commission, so y'all can fight over who gets a copy. And I wanted to provide some comments on the Wolf Plan. This is something that my boss, Sean Cantrell, normally does. Some of you may have heard the rumors, although Sean's not good at bragging about himself. He recently got a promotion, so he's now overseeing all of our field offices, and we're going to have to share him with the rest of the country now. So I'm picking up some of the duties that he has left in the Northwest.
Is he going to D.C.?
He's in D.C. and Seattle. He's splitting his time. So, but he did want me to convey that he is continuing to serve on the WAG and is fully committed to that process, and he's looking forward to that process starting back up again after a few months of taking some time off. Also, while it's extremely important that the department is engaging in this discussion about post-delisting and post-recovery of wolves, it's important to keep in mind that we are still several years away from that recovery. No confirmed wolves in the South Cascades, only a few breeding pairs in the North Cascades. So Sean just wanted me to convey to the commission and to the department that it's important that as this process moves forward, that we don't unrealistically increase and raise the expectations of the public that wolf recovery is imminent. And there's still a lot of work that needs to remain. So he'll be committed to working with the WAG and looks forward to working on this issue further.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you.
Lorna and Don.
Commissioner Carpenter, you mentioned earlier today that you like to see documentation. That's one of the problems with my issue of banning the dipper is that there literally is no documentation on the danger, and that is entirely because they do not have to report it. It's not a requirement by the BBL or anyone for them to document this. The perfect example is what the Smithsonian did here at the Olympic Peninsula when they attempted to put backpacks transmitters on a few of the dippers there. There's absolutely no record of it anywhere. I only found out about it through Freedom of Information Act when I had to go against the Smithsonian and the Olympic National Park. I found some emails that mentioned it. So people on the wildlife side of it, the wildlife biologists, ornithologists, they are not required to document anything that happens in a negative way to these birds. So whenever you ask any of your own people if there's a danger to this, they're going to say, no, there's not, because it's not recorded. There's no documentation. I am the only person probably in the entire world that has information and willing to share it about this. So documentation, this is going to be a one-sided presentation, what you're going to get from me always. I would love to have some biologists sit here with me and debate it, but it just will not happen. So that's all I got to say for the rest of today.
I recalled what I was thinking after last meeting when you came. And this is a question for staff. I'm not sure there are any staff in here who might be able to answer it. But don't we issue scientific collection permits for any bird banding that goes on in the state? I'm looking at Nate because you probably know a little bit about this. Nick. Can you talk a little bit about what the department's role and if it were a federal entity that was doing the study and the banding, would we be involved with the collection permit issuance? And
thank you, Commissioner Thorburn. And for the record, my name is Mick Cope. I'm the Deputy Assistant Director with the Wildlife Program. And we do have a scientific collection permit process that researchers apply to the department for any handling, and banding would be one of those things that we would get a permit request for. So we work with the universities in a variety of ways on those scientific collection permits.
And if it were the Smithsonian, which is a quasi-federal entity, would we still be
issuing? That's still a requirement.
Okay. And so the collection permit requires annual reporting.
It does.
So then we should have record of what was going on with this.
I don't know what the records show right now, but we would have records of people who have applied for a scientific collection permit to work on dippers or any other wildlife, and what their proposal is, what their study plan is, and all of that.
And then there's an annual reporting requirement with
right.
the collection permit. So they should be reporting numbers of birds and what was done with them.
Yes, there should be some disposition. I'm not sure. Haven't seen one in a little while, but not sure if we have anything on the dipper project that was done a few years ago, but we could look for that if you'd like.
There's institutions that do it. I mean, most of it's universities and such that contact. They also had to get permits, like, from the Olympic National Park. They're the people I dealt with in the very beginning, was confronting them about this situation. They were amazed that even, because they didn't know the numbers at the time, and this was almost 3 years into it, and they had banded 246. When I told the people there at the park about it, the guy, Jim, was just, wow. He had no idea. He thought it was going to be maybe 100 or less or whatever. But it is still, it is not a requirement. If there's any mortality or injury, they do not have to report it to anybody. It just doesn't happen, and it's because of the public outcry. It's because of people like me that come out that see this, because it's, you go back and forth about the value of these things and the studies and such, and in my opinion, everything that needs to be learned about the American Dipper has already been done. There is nothing more new to learn with the banding procedure. It's all about close observation. Tomorrow I'll talk to you more about what the difference of close observation versus the scientific banding process and what's out there. Because my documentation of their behavior is quite different than what you will find on Cornell's Birds of North America. And they base their observations on 1 hour of observation.
Could you get a little bit more information about what is required in the banding report so that we can better understand the oversight?
Absolutely. Yep, I can do that in several, a few examples for you.
Thanks,
right.
Mick. Thank you. And Dan Boholt and Lorna.
Good evening. I guess I can say that at this point in the day, commissioners. It's been a great meeting. I'm glad to be here. I'm Lorna Smith. I'm executive director for Western Wildlife Outreach. That'll be the first hat I'm wearing, and then I'm going to put on another hat for as a vice president of the Olympic Forest Coalition. I happen to live on the Olympic Peninsula. So first of all, I want to thank Commissioner Baker for the question you asked, and then thank Dr. Martorella for his answer, because I think I can give a shorter testimony today because I really stand behind, as an ecologist, this document, which you can't see the cover, the existing wolf plan, which so much scientific endeavor went into producing this document, and it was vetted through a double-blind, or a, I don't know, it wasn't a double-blind study. I mean, this was peer-reviewed extensively. So I think that we have an excellent plan, way better than any other state has produced, and just let's follow through with it. So I was glad to hear that that is the plan. And I do think that we should be a little bit cautious about thinking that we're anywhere really approaching recovery at this point in time. A couple of things I want to remind you about. This is the map that's in the plan of the best wolf habitat in the state of Washington, and you could probably even see from this distance that Southwest Washington, and look at that, the Olympic Peninsula, are the best wolf habitat by several different analytical methods the department used. That's where wolves want to be. So we need to get them to those areas before we can say we've recovered wolves. And also just to point out that there is a step-down process in this plan for delisting. So it doesn't just go from endangered and then tomorrow we're delisted. There's a process to go through, threatened and down to sensitive, and we're monitoring, and then we're going to be at, deem it recovery at some point. In Yellowstone, they almost made the mistake of saying, wow, we've reached a good number of wolves and we're recovered in Yellowstone, but of course they weren't going to go to, you know, any kind of lethal control in Yellowstone. But this photo, which I apologize, you cannot see, but I'll just tell you what you're looking at there, is a wolf in Yellowstone with a very bad case of sarcoptic mange, which became a real problem for the Yellowstone wolves and is still in the population, and it fluctuates up and down. But it can have a real impact on, and that's just one disease wolves are subject to, can have a real impact on the behavior of wolves. So, okay, that's the end of my one hat. And my second hat, which will be very quick, speaking on behalf of the board of the Olympic Forest Coalition, we're very much, very strongly, fervently in favor of a ban on Atlantic salmon net pen in Washington in the marine waters. I know there's several bills being contemplated. Whichever one gets us there the quickest and most legally defensible, that's the route we want to see us go. But we have been working with fellow conservationists up in BC who have, you know, alerted us for years to the dangers posed to our native salmon from those fish farms that have proliferated in BC. So that's it for my testimony.
Good evening. Dan Bohol. I bring you better news. The Department of Fish and Wildlife needs to be more involved in the Forest Service land uses. We finally got the Forest Service on the Olympic Peninsula to thin the forest for healthy forests. And so things were going great, and then all of a sudden we were shocked to find that every 60-year-old road that they were going in, rebuilding the road, thinning the forest, when they left, they made whoop-de-doo tank traps the entire distance of the road by digging the gravel up and piling it. Then they ripped stumps out of the ground and stacked them on top of the gravel, piled slash on top of that, and made it impassable for any wildlife or human to use it. So we contacted them. We tried to meet with them. Three-year battle was going on over it. We brought in a national access group. We finally met with them on site, and they've totally agreed that what they were doing was wrong. They made a mistake. They're not going to do that anymore. They're actually going to remove all what they did. And in this whole process, I kept trying to get Department of Fish and Wildlife to get involved, and they kind of were more, we can't take official position. So I got some of the field staff on their personal time to go look at this and gave their opinion that this was not wildlife habitat. Elk don't eat rocks. They don't eat logs. And so there's a lot of the future coming up, so I encourage the department to get more involved. And so when we formed this group called Olympic Public Access Coalition, we proposed to the Forest Service a lot of ideas, and they are now reaching out to us and want to be more involved. So the more we help them, the more they help us. So we have a meeting coming up with them here in Olympia, January 12th. It'd be great for there to be a Department of Wildlife person there, too. One thing that the Forest Service quit doing about 12 years ago, the department has a forage mix of grasses, clovers. It's a great for birds, mice, elk. And the Forest Service decided it wasn't native. We weren't going to use it anymore. And your staff fought with them over it, argued, tried to say it was naturalized. They just wouldn't go there. I had the forest supervisor for the entire Olympic Peninsula on my right hip the whole day we were out there. And I convinced her that this was the best thing to do. She's now approved it. And so now when they do their thinning, we can spread this on the forest. It's great for everybody. So I encourage the department to get more involved in this, because the Forest Service on the entire Olympic Peninsula plans on closing three-quarters of their roads. They're going to go from 2,100 miles of roads down to about 600, so 1,500 miles of existing roads are going to close. And so I encourage the department to do that. I'll whip through a couple things real quick. Okay. On youth, high school students have to do community service in order to get their graduation. There's an opportunity to work that out. Also on target shooting, on all these Forest Service lands, they have existing gravel pits that are just going to go to no use. You could have target shooting out there already. So,
thank you. Okay. That's a good suggestion. Gabriel Scott.
Thank you, commissioners, for the opportunity to speak to you today. It's a long day, and I I'll make this very short.
Harry, can you use the mic?
I'll make this rather short because I know that you have had a long day and want to go decompress. I think you know why I'm here. I'd like to speak on the lack of transparency in our fisheries, the continued trend and lack of transparency. I just wanted to highlight very quickly in the budget recommendations about the use of social media. And just to highlight that, I mean, I've been speaking with thousands of stakeholders throughout the day, and of course time doesn't permit for me to read all of their comments of those throughout the state that weren't able to be here today, but I would also just like to take the opportunity to just kind of give you a feel of the pulse of the stakeholders. And one of the things that we've found as a byproduct of this recent release of the secret hatchery program or hatchery management plan that was released, and that's the continued feeling of being disenfranchised by the stakeholders and how it impacts or potentially impacts the actual recovery that we're trying to accomplish through this hatchery plan. And what I mean by that is, in order for us to really accomplish anything in the recovery of the salmon in the state, we need to have the cooperation of all stakeholders involved. And by the appearance of disenfranchising or marginalizing the largest group of stakeholders, it's the feeling is that how can we trust anymore? How can we move forward with cooperation when we're not even sure that we were considered or our wants or our needs were considered in that management plan? So I'll just leave it at that. I just wanted to put that out there so that, and I know you guys understand this. The feeling is that we, as a large group of stakeholders, are just very, very disappointed in how this came out. Not just us as recreational anglers, but also as the fishery advisory boards. I've got a lot of traffic going on right now from fishery advisory board members that are just dismayed that they were left out of this process. We can't manage our fisheries like this. We can't hope to recover our salmon doing management this way any longer. It needs to be out in the open. It needs to be fully transparent so that we can all work together as a state to help fix these problems in our fisheries. Thank you.
Tom Davis.
Thank you. I'm not sure of the protocol what I should call you, but commissioners, thank Eminence. Yes, thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Gabriel Scott. I am in-house counsel for Cascadia Wildlands. Work out of Eugene. We're a bioregional organization, so we do some work in Washington as well. I'm here today to talk to you about the petition that I believe you'll be hearing on the 5th, your next meeting in January, from Trout Unlimited about suction dredge mining. You might think of it as recreational suction dredge miners. Some of those miners would be offended by that term, but hobby suction dredge mining. 2 points real quick, and we are involved with litigation against the department, so I have to be a little brief. It wouldn't be appropriate for me to talk about that stuff, but Trout Unlimited's petition is a good petition, and you should take it seriously. That's my first point. And the second point is that best available science ought to be, in my opinion, is the most useful guide for you to use in how to address what is politically and culturally a dicey sort of an issue. There's strong emotions from miners and from sport fishermen. There are sort of cultural factors like left, right, urban, rural things going on. Those have been a huge hindrance to effective regulation of recreational mining, how it impacts fish, and best available science is the way out of it. It's the department's job to regulate that activity in the way that protects fish the best. Science is the thing that we can all agree on that is going to get that done. And so I encourage you to take a close look at that petition, address the issue seriously, because it's not the most important thing for any of us, really. but it is important, and it is not something that we can just sort of let slip through the cracks if we are serious about salmon recovery, as I know that you all are. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chair Smith, Director Unsworth, members of the commission, my name is Tom Davis. I work with the Washington Farm Bureau, and this afternoon I'm also here representing the Washington Cattlemen Association. We were part of the group that sent to you the Words Matter document. And if you looked at the groups on there, it may be, I want you just to take a look at that. It's not always that these groups agree on anything, and on this we did. So I think that's monumental in itself. With wolf recovery well on its way, we're not there yet, as you've already heard, and we do agree with that, but it's on its way. We think now it's time to be very purposeful in shifting from recovery to looking at what life is like in Washington State in a post-delisting world. And that's being said from the position both of the folks that are recreational users, or the wildlife viewers, the hunters, as well as the livestock producers that live in a lot of this wolf country. You know, agriculture is the second largest industry in the state, and livestock production is the number four commodity group within that ag sector. And so it's an important sector to our economy. It's an important sector to our rural communities. And so how we manage wolves and maintain the economic viability of our livestock producers is important, as I think you all know. So we hope that this document is helpful, and the editorial comments that are included, I hope that you find of interest. But in the end, clearly, we think your leadership is going to be critical on this. We appreciate the document that the commission put out in April 2012, that looking forward to what a post-delisting management plan would look like, what it would contain, and think it's time just to encourage you and encourage the department to move forward on that. And maybe just lastly, I'm also a member of the Wolf Advisory Group, and I think that group is very much the one to stay involved in this delisting discussion, this management plan discussion. It's a great group, a great opportunity to bring people together, building trust, and looking for the future for how we manage wolves in Washington. So thank you.
Thank you for your involvement. Alan, you have the last.
Thank you, Chair, Commission, and Director. I wanted to briefly touch base on the sharp-tailed grouse aspect. I think that everyone, let me preface this. I am the regional rep for Safari Club International. I also sit on the board of Safari Club International. I am also a director on Hunters Heritage Council, and I was recently appointed about a year and a half ago by the director onto the Wildlife Diversity Advisory Council. So with regard to the sharp-tailed grouse, I think that everyone agrees that the species population is on the brink of being no more in the state of Washington. Accordingly, something must be done. We cannot simply just talk about it anymore. From my perspective as a hunter and a conservation-minded steward of our wild places and wild things, I recommend that the department and the commission do two things. To Commissioner Jay Holzmeier's point, and Jay Kane? Yeah, that's the point. Let's get locals on board as fast as possible. West side, east side, it doesn't matter. No one likes to be told what to do. You'll get much better buy-in and participation and success when people voluntarily want to be part of a solution. And I think we could find a lot of common ground on this. Part two of that is let hunters do their job and perform the task of giving the sharp-tailed grouse a fighting chance by managing predators. Yes, coyotes are canines and do readily propagate, but we can also readily remove them. So please keep us as part of that piece of the puzzle. This last part, I'd like to talk about the Budget Policy Advisory Group, and particularly the makeup of it. There are four hunting organizations and four fisheries organizations. Those are your two core priority stakeholders. Why is it then that there's only eight out of the 20 that are represented in there? And none of those are from waterfowlers or bird hunters, so which have done a tremendous amount of job, a tremendous amount in setting aside vast expanses for bird watching, wetland conservation, so on and so forth. So I would humbly request that if you see fit, let's see if we can get someone from either Ducks Unlimited or Washington Waterfowlers Association to also be a participant on that very important policy advisory board. That's all I've got.
Thank
you.
Thanks.
Yeah, sure.
We don't have a season on coyotes. You're welcome to come.
Yes, right. What about ravens?
Ravens are not something
that we can. Okay. Do you think there's any? Okay. I understand that, but. Yeah. But would we. We'd, okay. Yeah. Sure. Well, suffice it to say, let us help you.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's it.